The second day, they broke into working groups. The big bugs from the one end divided the assembly into three groups: combat, support and liaison, and hunter. Valentine ended up in the support and liaison group under Jala, the bald lieutenant colonel with the wall of campaign ribbons who'd asked the question about how the Kurians would react to a new freehold. Valentine wondered if the question hadn't been prearranged by Lambert. Valentine couldn't help liking him. Some of the other officers who knew him from other campaigns called him Jolly. Jala told those in Valentine's team to do the same.
Don't be fooled by all this. Just means I'm old. I don't know much more about high beam than you. They call me in because I know how to keep the soup pots full for an army on the march.
There were study guides to go through about Kentucky, the Virginias, and the surrounding areas. Every day, Valentine lugged around 200 or more pages of text and maps in Southern Command's battered three-ring binders with tabs for future additions as the operational plans were developed. An artist, or maybe just a bored student, had sewn a denim cover on Valentine's binder at some point or other. Valentine smiled when he saw William Post's name as one of the intelligence staff who'd prepared background. Post was at Southern Command's general headquarters now, studying and tracking Quisling military formations and assessing their capabilities. The appointment said a lot about his old number two, Will Post. General headquarters wasn't a place for cushy assignments bought by politics, patronage, or a mixture of rank and bureaucratic skill. You had to be good to get an office at GHQ. Post was good. They thumbed through the study guides until Lambert and Singh arrived. The big bugs had worked out a preliminary organizational chart before they even arrived, but gallstone surgery and the death of a major's spouse had meant a little last-minute juggling. The pair met with Jolly first, relocating to a corner while everyone else read through their local study guides. Valentine was studying a history of the Legworm Ranchers. He recognized some phrasing from his own reports about the Bulletproof, one of the Kentucky clans, when Jolly told him Singh and Lambert wanted him next. They shook hands, and the triad sat down. Singh's squashed flat face was pulled down a bit at the corners, reminding Valentine of a catfish.
Glad to meet you at last, Valentine.
Thank you, sir.
I had charge of the brigade in the Boston Mountains that was keeping Solon's boys busy while Southern Command was reorganizing in the swamps. They were getting set to roll over us when you derailed them in Little Rock.
Valentine wondered how Singh wasn't a general. His history, prompted, came back to Valentine in a flash. He'd kept 10 times his number tied down with a couple of regiments of regulars and some wolf and bear formations. He'd been at the Trans-Mississippi Combat Corps briefings.
I should be thanking you, then. They were so scared of you, they never shifted enough men to Little Rock to roll over us. It's an honor to meet you, sir.
If you two want a hug, I won't tell. We've got 12 more sit-downs today, Colonel.
Terrible thought. Dot's off schedule.
Are you sorry you're not with the Hunter or combat groups here, Valentine?
I'm just happy High Beam is underway.
I know. On call. There's a picture of you and him at the GHQ, by the way. It's in a case with some mementos from the drive on Dallas. You guys are sleeping on the hood of a truck. He's sitting with his back against the windshield and you're pillowed on his thigh. That's rather sweet. His fur is all muddy and spiky. I recognized you by the hair.
He was a good friend. If the rumors of a golden grog leading a guerrilla army in the coal country had any truth to them... I've got a feeling it's on Ka.
He's the one who brought in the heartroot tuber, right?
It's more like a mushroom than a tuber.
Heartroot was protein-rich, with a nice balance of fats and carbohydrates. It was usually ground up and made into animal feed, or a hearty meal that could be boiled in water or baked, or a sweet paste that could be put on a biscuit. The last variant popularly called grog guck.
But we're putting Dots off schedule again.
Thanks, Val.
Now, where's Stiakowski? I thought she'd be involved in this.
Killed, 2 months ago. Plane crash in Mississippi. She was coordinating our wolves with some guerrillas in Alabama.
Valentine went numb, knowing the shock wouldn't sink in until he was alone at night, the way it always did. He was horribly used to this kind of news after a dozen years of fighting.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's why I try to avoid the bother of a personal life.
Lambert opened the thick folder on her lap. Bookmarks with notations on it ran all around its three edges like a decorative fringe. She glanced at Singh as she spoke.
We want you to put together a formation of company strength, Valentine. You'll recruit them out of a pool of refugees at Camp Liberty. Do you know about Liberty?
That's where the rabbits picked up by rally base were sent.
Rabbits was Southern Command slang for people who made the run out of the Kurian zone. Valentine had seen horse-drawn wagons full of them leaving for Liberty. just like Camp Freedom in the South or Independence in the Northwest. What was the new one in North Texas called? Reliance.
No.
The commander's a good egg. He'll help you out. He'll be ordered to assist, as a matter of fact.
What has he been told?
The bare minimum. Keep using the Argent ID for now. Southern Command indulges war criminals as one of the more popular Kurian propaganda points. They talked up your escape in Kansas to show what Southern Command does with murders. Even the Clarion still mentions you now and then when they're picking at old scabs. Sham justice for real murder, that sort of thing.
The Clarion was an anti-war paper. Most of the soldiers called it the Clarinet because of the high squealing tune its editorial page frequently played.
Well, what's the purpose of this company?
We want a few locals who can speak to the folks in their own language. Facilitation with trade, scouting, scavenging. Ideally, your men will later get promoted to lead squads and platoons of their own, once we're set up properly in the Triangle. So think about it. One day your company could swell into a regiment.
Officers?
We'll give you a lieutenant to take your place if something happens to you.
Happy thought. NCOs?
Take your pick. Though we'd rather you did it from the Ready Reserve. We'd hate to disturb frontline units too much. We've got some names if you feel like you're out of touch.
I'd like to be able to offer a Sergeant Major star, sir.
For a company?
You said it might grow.
I don't see a problem with that. I'll speak to the General.
Where will we train?
Haven't worked that out yet. It might be rally base unless they decide that's too far forward. High Beam will establish a separate depot wherever they end up.
I don't suppose you can tell me when we're going.
You must be joking, Valentine. What I can tell you is that it won't be before next year. So if you want to take some time off to disappear into northern Missouri again, you can have a couple of weeks once you've got your men assembled and their training. Clear it with Singh and myself, and we'll square things with the General. Just don't get yourself caught.
Be terrible if they found out New Orleans was about to be hit.
So, how does it sound, Valentine? I know you've wanted a mission to aid the guerrillas in the coal country. Suit you?
It's back to the Kurian zone. I like it there. I can shoot at my enemies.
You'd like to take a shot at Semi, I bet.
Valentine shrugged. How did she know that? Well, not worth thinking about that. Lambert had taken an unusual interest in him. He wouldn't be surprised if she'd read the old letters from Molly Carlson, resting in some warehouse with his cat claws and other souvenirs.
One more thing. Do you mind being available for questions about conditions in Kentucky? I get the feeling Brother Mark isn't going over that well.
New church just sticks in some of these guys' throats. They're not swallowing what he says.
My gag reflex has been acting up, too. Not a big fan of churchmen.
Speaking of swallowing, he only eats raw food. Nuts and milk and honey and stuff. Gets odd looks at lunchtime, and he never joins in for pizza or barbecue.
I saw him eat a hard-boiled egg.
But you don't mind being called on for an opinion?
Not at all, sir.
Go on to your next meeting, Lambert. I'll catch up in a minute.
It's going to be a busy 10 days. We'll talk again, Valentine.
I look forward to that, Colonel.
So, Valentine, you were headed for staff training when they arrested you.
Yes.
Sorry to hear that. I went through it, you know. I think we would have done it about the same time, right after Dallas.
How was it?
Tough. Felt like I was being rotated through every unit in the command. I've got most of a footlocker filled with my texts and workbooks. I'd like to loan it to you. There's a lot of good training materials in there. I expect if High Beam gets off the ground, it might be useful to you. Lambert wasn't kidding about that regiment. We're going to have to rely on the locals to supply most of our manpower. They'll need training from our best people.
Thank you, sir. I'd like that.
You haven't had to decipher my handwriting yet. I know we've just met, but I'm glad you're with us on this trip. When I went over the list of names our sharp young colonel drew up and I saw yours, I remembered when we heard you'd blown up the Little Rock Depot. You don't know what that meant to us, boxed up in those mountains.
Thank you, sir.
Valentine spent the next 10 days on double duty, working with the planners in his group and acting as a second opinion to Brother Mark, though he couldn't answer the questions about the guerrillas in the Triangle, of course. He attended working meetings, helped write plans and orders, but mostly thought about the company he was to build. Some days he had little to do but listen and be grateful for the quiet time to get himself organized and draw up his own plans. The officers bonded in meetings, at meals, and especially on the baseball diamond.
Safe!
Colonel Gage, in charge of the regulars, blew hot and cold, alternately charming and cutting. Gage's chief of staff was the rather pugnacious and compact Major Cleveland Bloom, an odd name for a woman, Valentine thought. She captained Valentine's team and went by the name Cleo on the baseball diamond, where she once pitched a shutout, not the easiest thing to do with softball. When her team was at bat, she slapped each of them, man and woman, on the butt and ordered them to get a hit. She didn't care about stolen bases, doubles, or walks. She wanted hits and more hits. She had a similar reputation in the field as a fighter. The Bear Lieutenant, a scarred figure named Gamecock, only stayed a week and was the first to leave.
Yeah, well, my team's in the hospital. I got two places to fill and there's few enough bears about these days. I'm gonna try to talk a couple out of retirement.
Valentine heartily wished him luck, thinking of his own plans after the departure date. Gamecock hadn't been much involved in the meetings in any case. Bears didn't give a damn about planning. You put them up close to the enemy and turn them loose. The civilians rotated in and out of the meetings unpredictably. Usually one or two were away, but never all three. Valentine began to think of them as a single organism that morphed, for they dressed and spoke remarkably alike. One day, a courier arrived, bearing a package. Valentine unwrapped it in his Spartan quarters and found a basket containing a set of paper-wrapped soaps inside.
Glad things worked out for the best. Please accept this peace offering. Best of fortune and rewards of honor in the coming year. S.
Valentine unwrapped one of the soaps. Sandalwood. They even had elegant little labels written in French. Simmy had remembered that Valentine had asked for a bar during their interview while he was incarcerated in the Nut awaiting trial. At Valentine's shower that evening, he spent an extra 15 minutes wallowing in the silky feel of Simmy's gift. It lathered up at the barest kiss of water and left his skin as smooth as an infant. He found Brother Mark silent, gloomy company during their meetings together. He was the one member of the group Valentine couldn't get a feel for one way or another. Of course, high-ranking members of the New Order were habitually standoffish, quiet, and reserved. He sometimes wondered if Lambert just placed Brother Mark with the planning group to act as a lightning rod for discontent. In mistrusting the churchmen, all the other officers grew closer together. He grew fond of the unassuming Jolly. Valentine was looking forward to serving under him.
Beats being called Jelly, my old playground nickname. I was chunky as a kid. Don't know how I managed it. Whole family was just about starving thanks to the cold summers. At 16, I became a letter boy and started biking around with mail. And it finally came off.
Meanwhile, Valentine's denim-covered file folder grew ever thicker as they worked out variants on the basic plan involving weather and enemy counter moves. High Beam was taking shape, and Valentine approved. He learned there was even a network of cats in place to wreck rail lines in Tennessee and a bridge or two across the Ohio to delay any counter moves with large formations of troops. There was only one functioning rail line through central Kentucky anyway, and it would be easy enough to disable it. Then it was time for them to disperse. They'd meet again outside rally base in a gradual buildup. The regulars wouldn't arrive until the last moment. They'd marshal farther to the south to preserve the illusion of the move on New Orleans. Lambert walked around the square one last time and handed each of them a folded sheet of paper the size of a small piece of stationery. Lambert's neat handwriting was a little blotchy. Obviously, the ink she used to write the 40 notes wasn't the best quality.
The code name for this operation is now Javelin. Any changes to the Blue Book plan will be marked Javelin. Everyday correspondence and orders will still be marked High Beam, as will certain messages from me designed to bring confusion to the enemy. Please ignore any High Beam order from my office dated with an even number. This message is printed on sweet rice paper. It's tasty. Enjoy.
Valentine smiled. Confusion to the enemy. A week later, he stood before a house well outside Russellville, Arkansas, wearing civilian clothes and carrying his Maximilian Argent identification. The imposing brick house had a rebuilt look to it, with a newer roof and windows added to something that had probably stood vacant and deteriorating since 2022, There was paper over the upstairs windows, and Valentine saw a pile of sawdust in the garage. A big garden stood out back, and melon patches flanked the house. Household herbs grew under the sills. Valentine walked behind the house, towards the nearer of two melon patches. He found Nilay Patel next to a small mountain of stacked river-smooth rocks, digging what looked like a shallow trench connecting two foxholes, but judging from the role of waterproofing, might be a sizable artificial pond. Valentine took a closer look at the bucket beside Patel. There was a revolver handle in there.
Sergeant Patel!
Lieutenant Valentine!
How are you, Sergeant?
Come across the hedge, just that-a-way. Noddy, drinks, an old comrade is here to visit.
Patel picked up a curved-handled cane and limped to some garden furniture with hand-sewn cushions. Nadia Patel, whom Valentine had once met as Nadia Mallow, emerged with a tray. Though she kept her glorious head of hair, she'd aged considerably, but then Solon's takeover of the Ozarks had taken her first husband. Valentine smelled spicy mustard.
I thought I might as well bring you your lunch as well. Would you like something,
David. Yes, it's a good walk from Russellville.
I like it that way.
How are the knees?
Ah, the knees. I stayed too long a wolf.
You're not listed as a disable.
If there's a crisis, I don't want to be stuck behind a wheel or a desk. I have good days and bad ones. I've been working since morning, so this will be a bad day. I know this is not a social call. As you might have been able to tell, Nadia has that feeling too.
Nilay, you were the best sergeant I ever knew in the Wolves, which makes you the best I ever knew, period. I saw you listed as inactive. I would have called, but...
We don't have a phone. I keep a radio. For emergencies.
Nadia Patel emerged and dropped a sandwich in front of Valentine.
You're welcome.
Now, Noddy.
I know what he's here for. A sandwich he's welcome to. Another husband he's not.
Listen, Patel, I'll leave. You two enjoy your lunch. It's a beautiful garden, by the way.
Sit down, sir. Let me hear what you have to say. You came all this way.
It's an op. Outside the Free Republics. I can't say any more. But your legs...
are still fit to carry me. David, I've been retired just long enough to feel the grave close in. With nothing to do, I've started smoking again. I should like very much to help.
Here, I thought I'd have to convince you. I've got warrant papers for a star to go in the middle of the stripes. You'll be my top.
I do not need convincing. She does. That would help.
Well, don't you want to talk it over with her first?
For 3 years, I have done my best to give her whatever she wants. This I want. She is upset because she knows me. I said no once before to Captain LaHave, and I came to regret it.
He's still alive, as far as I know. He made it to the Cascades. He's fighting out there now.
I always suspected there was more to you.
Tell her it would raise your pension. You'd get a Sergeant Major's land grant, too. You could sell it or add to this spread.
Thank you, sir. Not for the land. For the chance to get back to important work.
It's just for a few months' work. All in the Free Territory. Training. When we step out, you'll come back here with your rank permanently raised. I'll promote someone else into your place.
We shall see. You say you need men trained, not wolves?
Unfortunately, no. Regulars, more or less. I'm due at Camp Liberty in 6 days. Is that enough time to get your affairs in order?
Camp Liberty? Yes. If I have the written orders.
I pre-filled out most of it. Except your next of kin. That kind of thing.
I know where to submit the copies.
Thank you, Nilay. It'll only be a few months. I can promise her that, if you like.
Don't. It would be better coming from me. She knows promises don't mean much where the cause is concerned.
I could find housing for her, you know. You wouldn't have to be separated so much.
I think she would prefer to keep fixing this place. She's a better carpenter and painter than me, anyway. When it comes to homely matters, I'm fit only for ditch digging. Besides, she has a sister in Russellville. She'll be better here.
Valentine ate his sandwich, wondering if she'd spit in the mustard. They talked about old friends until it was time to leave. Patel's eyes shone with excitement as they shook hands. Odd that Valentine was now the reluctant one. Camp Liberty, November. The word camp implies a certain bucolic simplicity, but Camp Liberty is anything but. It is, in fact, a small town once named Stuttgart, the rice and duck capital of the world. A few old-timers remain in town, making do, as the locals say, with the constant influx and outflow of people picked up from the banks of the Mississippi. Everything from exhausted, half-starved families to rogue river patrol units who beached their boat and ran for it are funneled into Liberty. The former Camp Liberty, which stood just south of town, headquartered at the old high school just off Route 79, was destroyed during Solon's takeover. Much of Stuttgart's housing was demolished, and populace was herded into temporaries, prefabricated homes designed for easier concentration of a populace, a Kurian specialty. Solon had great plans for the rice-growing region, and construction materials were hauled in for apartment buildings, a new Universal Church community apex, even a theater. When Solon's Trans-Mississippi Order collapsed, most of the residents fled the wire-bordered housing, happy to abandon the roof over their heads for wider horizons. Southern Command was not about to let the construction gear, raw materials, and prefabricated housing go to waste, so Stuttgart became the new Camp Liberty, and work began on a new hospital, training and orientation center, and combined primary and secondary school for children who escaped the KZ with their parents. Meanwhile, their elders were put to work in the rice mills when they weren't attending class to acclimate them to life in tougher but freer lands. When David Valentine visited Liberty, it was the finest facility of its kind in the Texas and Ozark Free Republics, and it was still under construction. After checking their luggage at the station, Valentine paid for a horse cart so he and his new sergeant major could ride through town, or the camp, rather, saving Patel's legs from the walk. They passed two checkpoints. There were no wire, towers, or searchlights, at least visible from Main Street, as Valentine learned. There were guards watching from a balcony or two, and more mounted officers riding horses chatted and swapped news with the locals. They held handkerchiefs over their faces as they passed through construction dust. Men in dungarees with sleeves and trouser legs of different colors were digging a foundation.
POWs?
Doesn't look like it. I don't see a single guard.
Look at all the signage.
Patel gestured toward a general store. A universal white stick figure pushed a wheeled basket across a plain green background. Iconography for beds, phones, and even babies and animals hung over other doors or were stuck into second-floor windows. The streets, too, were color-coded and marked with animal cracker outlines. Valentine had visited more Kurian zones than even an experienced soldier like Patel. He was used to signs, both written and in iconography.
It's for illiterates. Shopping cart for store, dollar sign for bank, syringe for medical center.
Of course, in the free territory, there wouldn't be a smiley face for the NUC building. They ate in a diner, killing time until Valentine's appointment with the camp supervisor, which was just as well, as the service was slow to the point that Valentine got their own coffee refills. Valentine helped the attendant at the register make change for his bill when Valentine threw him off by paying a $12.62 tab with $13.12.
I'm all muddled up from multiplication and division, sir. Clean forgotten my subtraction.
Take your time. I just wanted a couple dollars to buy a paper.
Always amazes me that they can even find their way to the territory.
West of the big river and freedom. The underground helped some of them along.
Valentine turned a wet paint sign right side up as they walked down the sidewalk, and the gap-toothed painter gave them a Morse code grin and a thumbs up. Liberty's administration building looked like an old town hall or possibly a courthouse. They got directions from a bright and attentive young woman in another strange dual-color outfit. Supervisor Felshtinsky had a nice corner office with a view of the towering rice mills and a staff of three. All of them had their heads down, buried in paperwork.
My name's Argent, Southern Command. I got a 2 o'clock appointment.
The super's out on the grounds. I can page him on the walkie-talkie.
I'd appreciate that.
Sorry he's out, but you never know with trains. He's a very busy man. Supervisor Felshtinsky? Supervisor Felshtinsky, you have a visitor in your office. Please report back at your soonest convenience. Welcome to Camp Liberty. Visitor ID tags and a house key. You can use the ID tag to eat in any of the cafeterias. Your trailer's in the southeast quadrant, just behind this building. Go in through the green arch. You can see it from the south side of this building. You're lucky. As guests, you have a kitchen with a fridge and everything. We'd appreciate it if you didn't wear pistols. And you can check any other guns in at the armory. It's in this building's basement.
Why no pistols?
Most of the folks here, they just wilt when they see someone with a gun. Might as well put on a pair of lifts and a reaper's hood.
I'd asked for an index of your current residents who came out of Kentucky and Tennessee. Even the Virginias.
Haven't got to it yet. We've got only one computer allocated to admin, and only one man who knows how to work the database. Our old printer runs on curses and tears.
Whew, dog. Hammer's gonna go as red as a baboon's butt.
Tell me about it.
Who's Hammer?
My CO. Ex-bear. He'll probably be here by tomorrow to get things moving.
You think the file cabinets will fit through that window?
Eventually.
You'll have your list delivered to the trailer this evening.
They met Supervisor Felshtinsky out front. He had a tall, muscular assistant and rode in an electric golf cart. Valentine had never seen a golf cart fitted out with a gun rack. A beautiful over-under shotgun rested in its locks, and Felshtinsky had flying ducks painted on the back of the low-riding vehicle. Its rear was filled with plastic file folders. Felshtinsky turned in his seat to shake their hands. He looked relaxed and tan in a polo shirt.
You'll excuse me not standing. I've been on wheels since 58.
He had a strong grip and heavy shoulder muscles. Valentine guessed he lifted weights. You didn't get muscles like that just dragging your body around. Valentine felt humbled and apologetic, as he always did when meeting someone who'd lost a piece of themselves.
Hop in back there. I'll give you a tour.
As they moved through the base, Felshtinsky told them about his post. He was proud of his operation. He had close to 4,000 people under his charge, temporary residents acclimating to the free territory, or permanents who'd settled around Liberty.
We got as many teachers here as Little Rock or Dallas.
How long do they stay?
Well, it depends. Sometimes a young couple meets up here and decides to get married and start fresh. Leaves right away. We get some, not much smarter than a well-trained horse. They count on their fingers and can recite a few church verses about flushing only once a day. Try learning to ride at 43.
Felshtinsky explained how all the residents earned Liberty Bucks doing training. Liberty Bucks could buy them furniture and appliances for their homes or beers at the camp's bowling alley, and most of the merchants in town let them use the script to buy from a limited selection of toiletries and merchandise provided by Southern Command's warehouses at a discount. They passed the first wire Valentine had seen. It was ordinary fencing, and a military policeman with a pistol stood in a guardhouse at a gate. The tightly packed trailers inside the fence looked too numerous for a prison compound, unless the residents of Liberty were unusually lawless.
What's that?
That's for Quislings. They stay there until they're cleared by Southern Command. They're worried about another big sabotage outburst, like just before Solon showed up, so they make sure.
Valentine saw one of the residents pushing a wheelbarrow with a yellow plastic water keg in it. He wore that alternate color scheme Valentine had seen here and there. They drove around the hospital and the ethanol plant, the rice mill and the cane fields. Arrowheads of ducks and geese flew overhead.
Lots of waterfowl in this part of Arkansas. If you want to get up early and go for a duck, I got the best blind in the county. Privileges of rank.
Sergeant Major?
I would like that. If I could have the loan of a birding gun. What about you, sir?
I'll spend the morning going over the printouts. Assuming they showed up and we don't have to sick the hammer on our host staff.
Everything about the next day, save for Patel's ducks, simmered in a homemade korma sauce all afternoon in their tiny cabin oven and served over, what else, rice, disappointed. Their first order of business, after dressing the morning ducks, was to check out Liberty's militia training camp. The young men and women were sad specimens, mostly undersized, undertrained, and undereducated. Valentine had never seen so many hollow chests, flat feet, bad eyes, and rickety knees.
To think, these are the ones with the ability to make it out.
They stopped by the rifle range and saw a couple of men in the two-tone Quisling fatigues training some kids to shoot.
Hold it tight on your shoulder, recruit! It's not gonna hurt you! Unless you hold it like a snake, it's gonna bite!
You heard the man, for cur's sake! Keep your damn eyes open and on target when you pull the trigger!
Why don't you show them a thing or two, Sergeant Major Patel?
Can do, sir. Let me see that gun, recruit.
Probation! That's what we call them.
That's what we call them, Sergeant.
That's what we call them, Sergeant!
Patel still didn't have his stripes with the star in the middle for his old wolf deerskins. The probation came to his feet smartly, took out the magazine. He presented the weapon to Patel.
Sergeant!
Patel placed his cane against his crotch. He checked the probation's weapon, barrel to butt.
They take good care of their weapons.
They're not afraid to clean them, sir.
The other probation ignored the byplay, remaining in the prone position with his gun resting on a sandbag.
Dang. Missed it. Them sights is all messed up.
May I, probation?
Patel put his cheek to the weapon, remaining in a standing position. The spotter pulled the target down and pushed it up again with a bit of red tape at the edge of the ten ring.
He's right, Valentine. The sights are off.
Valentine called for an evening meeting in one of the rec centers, but the meeting wasn't as crowded as Valentine would have liked. The basketball courts in the rec center could have held 1,000 people, with more in the stands, but he got only a few hundred, and many of them were women with children. Valentine didn't see a single person in the two-tone overalls or outfits. He wasn't that surprised. A former Quisling could expect an instant death sentence if found bearing arms against the Kurians.
Should have advertised free beer, Valentine.
I'm looking for volunteers to go back into the Kurian zone. To go back fighting. This time with an army of our people. I don't need riflemen so much as facilitators. People who know the locals and can interact with them. Service grants you all the benefits of OFR citizenship, pension benefits, retirement allotment, and combat service bonuses. Anyone interested, join Sergeant Major Patel here in the bleachers. We'll come around, get your information, meet, answer questions. Then we'll let you know in the next day or so if you'll be called back for a physical and a second interview.
A man with a Riceland cap smiled at Valentine as he passed and touched his cap.
First rule, Johnny Soldier, is don't volunteer for nothing. Goes the same in free territory.
They got 11. Valentine could tell right off that he wouldn't want 3 of them. Way too young or far too old. They took down the details of them all anyway. Later, in the dim light of the cramped trailer kitchen, Valentine looked over the applications, over the duck and rice, and a couple of beers Patel had had the foresight to buy as the day went south. They'd had to fill out the blanks for the 4 illiterates. Well, they could write their names, but that was about it.
6 or 8, depending on the physical. We might get another couple dozen out of the militia in training, and that's if we don't restrict it to those from Kentucky and Tennessee. Southern Command's already got the pick of the men passing through here. The ones eager to fight have already joined up.
The only 2 I really liked were those probations on the rifle range.
I think those will be our first recruits.
God help us.
Patel was slow getting up. He'd flex his legs and then get up on one elbow. Then he'd swing his legs down and raise and lower each shoulder. Valentine brought him some hickory coffee. Though moving coffee beans between Kurian zone and free territory wasn't illegal, at least as far as the UFR was concerned, just dangerous, and smugglers saw to it that such luxuries were available, Valentine couldn't afford the price. The only thing stimulating about the hickory coffee was the temperature. Whoever made this mix put just enough of the real thing in to remind you what it wasn't.
I was thinking we could try having breakfast in Quisling camp.
You think we'll do better with the Quislings?
Patel massaged and rotated his knees, reached for the cup, and downed half his steaming coffee. And held out the mug for a refill. His throat must be tough as his leathers, Valentine decided. The Quislings ate in an oversized Quonset hut. Valentine looked across the group, mostly men. There were far fewer women and children in this group. with something like hunger. These specimens were straighter, fleshier, longer of limb, and more alert of eye. Some wore tool belts or had hard hats dangling from nearby hooks. Others read or did crosswords over the remains of their breakfast. He shifted his feet and cleared his throat.
Could I have your attention, please? Could I have your attention, please?
Oi! Who wants to kill a few Kurians?
Felshtinsky leaned back in his wheelchair, shaking his head at Valentine and Patel seated opposite.
Sorry, can't have them.
Why?
Ex-Kurian forces aren't allowed to just leave Liberty whenever they want. They have to be cleared by Southern Command.
If you just need a signature, I'll take responsibility.
Sorry, it's not that simple. I can't release them to you.
What if General Lehman's HQ signs off for
them? It's not just Southern Command. The civilian authority has to sign off on them as well.
Which civilian authority?
Interstate Security Office.
Valentine knew little about the ISO, save that their field officers were called marshals. He'd once seen one come into Rally Base to pick up two River Patrol quislings who'd gotten drunk and decided to fish from the wrong bank of the river. The marshal wore blue pants with a navy stripe down each side and had a badge, but other than that, he looked like a typical hand on a horse farm.
I don't suppose there's someone from the ISO here.
As a matter of fact, there is. You've got a UFR ISO district marshal just across the street at the station. He runs a one-man show. He's got an office off our regular police force. And I wish you luck with him.
The duty sergeant at the small police station had advised Valentine and Patel that Ray Petrie usually showed up any time between 8 and 11, depending on how late the card games went. They sat in the waiting room drinking police station coffee and used the station washroom shortly thereafter. Liberty cops liked their smuggled-in beans strong. First a half hour, then an hour passed, and they still waited for him to appear. When they'd arrived, a couple was already in line. Both wore two-tone dungarees, and the woman was swollen in pregnancy.
Not long now.
You don't know Petrie. I was a librarian in a youth vanguard school. I've got a job here, filing. But our application still hasn't been approved. We don't even want to move out of town. And we met here. That's how long the wait's been.
I meant not long for the child.
Oh, it's our second.
Ray Petrie had alcohol on his breath at 10:30 in the morning. He entered yawning, a fleshy man with a heavy mustache and a growth of beard. He paused on the way in, a thoughtful look on his face, then grabbed the edge of the duty sergeant's desk as though to keep himself from keeling over.
Oh, Christ, Petrie.
A minute.
Valentine spotted the station cat as it managed to flash past the marshal through the office door.
Come on. Open for business.
These two were here first.
They can wait. They're used to it.
Go ahead. I insist.
Valentine watched the couple enter the room. Before they even crossed the threshold, their faces already wore a mask of defeat.
Well, good news, Courage.
Really?
Your application came back. Provisionally approved.
Provisionally?
Well, your list of references got misplaced somewhere between here and the office. And believe you me, that might take a while. I can make sure they get found soon for another 500.
500, Marshal? We don't have 500 to spare.
You want that kid born a regular citizen, right?
Valentine flushed. Those poor people. This was how business was carried out in the Kurian zone. Some combination of an office and a title with a bit of power, looking for his taste of sugar on the transactions crossing his desk. He and Patel exchanged a look. Patel worked his jaw as though he wanted to spit.
You'll have it in a week, Marshal.
Well, that's great, Courage. That's real great. To show you two just how good I take care of you, I'll give you the provisional without waiting. And there you are.
The couple left, the man holding a file folio as tightly as he did his wife. Valentine and Patel stood up to enter, but Petrie was right behind the couple.
Mr. Chance, I'm going to lunch.
I'm in a hurry. How about I buy you lunch in exchange for 15 minutes of your valuable time?
Well, you got it, Militia.
The bill disappeared so smoothly, Valentine thought Petrie an amateur magician. He held the door open, and they entered his office. The cat crouched, peering under a bookcase. Valentine suspected a mouse down there. Maybe more than one. Enough crumbs and bits of paper-wrapped sandwich littered the desk and sat in the unemptied wastebasket to feed a family of mice. A file cabinet with pending stenciled on it had another overflowing box of paperwork atop it marked priority pending.
Now what can I do for a militia major and a wolf by the looks of it?
I'm gonna need some paperwork processed quickly. I want to do some recruiting among the probations. About 100.
100? Probations? You mean let 'em loose?
No, just released to Southern Command, through me.
Oh, that'll take months.
You want to do this the easy way or the hard way, Petrie?
Meaning what?
Meaning you can say anything for the cause and get off your duff, figure out a way to get ISO sign-off on the men I want, pick up the phone and talk to whoever you need to in order to get them cleared to join the command.
And what's the easy way?
That was the easy way.
Looks like I'm late for lunch, gentlemen.
He wants the hard way.
Go to lunch, Petrie. Make it a big one. By the time you get back, Sergeant Major Patel and I will have sworn out a warrant for your arrest. We both heard you extort a civilian on a Southern Command base. For $500, to be exact. In case you don't know military law, that's a very big no-no. Lose your appetite? You might think that being OSI, you're not subject to military law, but the people you've been juicing are certainly protected by it. You'll spend at least a night in the cells, probably more, as it'll take a bit of time to get you counsel. With our sworn statements, JAG investigators will be here tomorrow. I'll tell him to be sure to bring a good accountant just to see how your paperwork balances up for this little corner of ISO. I wonder why you don't have a clerk to help you with some of these files, Petrie? Or do you? Existing only on paper, maybe? In any case, maybe the Jaggers can't prosecute, but they can tie up your case in a beautiful ribbon and present it to the circuit court.
You think you're so smart, Militia. Didn't you read the name on the door? My uncle's the lieutenant governor of Texas. Now, I'll make a couple of phone calls, and whatever stink you made will get blown right out the window. You'll get busted down to private, and you'll spend the next 4 years pumping out porta-johns for the biodiesel plant.
Thanks for the tidbit, Petrie. I don't follow politics, so I didn't recognize the name. But right after I talk to JAG, I'll see if I can get a couple newspapers interested. Recent arrest implicates lieutenant governor in corruption probe. Is how the Clarion will put it, I expect. But better yet, governor's office tainted. Papers love a good coat of taint. Be interesting to see if your uncle lifts a finger to help you. Hope you remember to send him his birthday card.
Two can play your game, Militia. I can fill out warrants of my own. You're threatening an ISO officer into malfeasance. Maybe they'll put us in adjoining cells.
You're not a big fan of reason, are you, Petrie? You never should have hit me.
What? I never put a hand on
the nose, Patel. Good and hard.
Patel's shot hit Valentine hard across the bridge of his nose. White light shot through his brain, and when he opened his eyes again, he tasted blood, felt it dripping.
Patel! Restrain the marshal! He's flipped!
What is this? I didn't do anything!
Patel moved nimbly for a man of his bulk. Petrie tried to rise, but Patel sat him back in his chair hard with a good shove. Patel gripped the marshal across the back of his head and his right arm. Valentine recognized the grip. He'd been in it often enough. Patel had been the 2nd Wolf Regiment's premier wrestler for 3 years running. Valentine had once seen his new sergeant major dislocate a horse rustler's shoulder when he didn't like the tone of his answers under questioning. Valentine wiped his bleeding nose and flicked the blood onto Petrie.
We're going to take care of 3 pieces of business this morning, Petrie. First, you're going to fill out 100 releases for me with the names blank. Second, you're going to do whatever paperwork needs to be done for your central office. Patel and I both know how to write and type. We can do either to give you a hand. We'll even send out for sandwiches on my tab and have a working lunch. When I'm satisfied, we're going to write out your resignation from ISO. You can tell your uncle you got sick of rice.
one slip-up, one bit of paperwork slowed up, one questioning telegram, and you're going to jail, Petrie. I'd better see a postcard from whatever sinecure your uncle finds you. Yes?
But they're Quislings!
That wasn't a yes. Dislocate his shoulder whenever you like, Patel.
Who cares if they get squeezed? They've done plenty of squeezing across the river, believe you me.
That's in the past.
You're assaulting an ISO officer. You'll wind up... Oh! I didn't think you'd do it.
A dislocation's easy to fix, Petrie. Keep your hand away from that phone. Broken fingers are a bitch while they heal.
I could pop his jaw, Valentine. That'll cut his talking down to low.
What do you say, Marshal? Have we reached a deeper understanding? You got three more limbs. I don't want to have to leave you in a bathtub full of ice without any of them working, but I will.
You can have them. I hope one of them rolls a grenade into your tent for me. That's all the thanks you'll get from those mooks.
You're a mean, stubborn bastard, Petrie. If your uncle can't find anything for you, you're welcome to join my outfit.
High Beam Assembly Area, Arkansas, November. Just outside the city of Jonesboro, now notable only for its hospital, which is the only one in the northeastern corner of the state, a new camp is going up. Southern Command believes that the best people to build a camp are the soldiers who have to eat, sleep, and train in it. Cartload after cartload of lumber, tenting, plumbing, and wiring arrives as the assembly area swells, hauled from the rail terminus to the camp by ox wagons and mule teams. A tricky autumn dumped rain and a freak snowstorm on the soldiers as they hammered and tacked and strung. Now, with canvas roofing above their heads at last, and corduroy roads made of scrub timber and wood chips, the rain blows out northeast and a cool, dry fall sets in, though the chill in the midnight to dawn air hints at worse to come. Valentine's company arrived after the Wolf contingent and bear teams, but before most of the guard forces of the expeditionary brigade. They got their own corner of the assembly area, a little blister near the camp's drainage. As far as the men were concerned, they were preparing for a long out. Lambert had planted rumors that their destination was New Orleans, or a big raid on the river patrol base at Vicksburg. Consequently, the men assumed that they'd be going in the opposite direction, perhaps to Omaha or another try at western Kansas. One Wolf swore that it would certainly be Omaha, as he knew for a fact that Major Valentine was familiar with the city, as his sister had served under him on Big Rock Hill and afterward on the drive into Texas. She knew all about him. Others bet him that it was Kansas, as Colonel Singh had buried a lot of soldiers there and was going back to reclaim old ground. Each man both hopes for and fears the coming long out. On the return from such a campaign, promotions and awards are handed out like Archangel Day candy. Quieter, dirtier stories of the women looking for an easy out of the Kurian zone appeal to some. Others talk of strange liquors and dishes. The best of them, writing letters home or making out the public paragraphs of their wills, refer to the gratification of liberating a town or county, the fear of the residents that slowly transforms to hope, and the hard work of making individuals out of cattle. David Valentine, looking at his motley assortment of Camp Liberty volunteers, 92 former Quislings and 12 refugees, of which 9 are women, drawn up on a freshly cleared field within their winter encampment for their first morning's exercises, readies himself for the strain of once again being responsible for men's lives, including, in the words of his old Wolf Captain Lahav, burying your mistakes. Patel was still the only NCO. Valentine's requests had disappeared into the maw of Southern Command's digestive process. What would emerge from the other end remained to be seen. He was lined up with the other men, ahead of the massed ranks. Valentine wore his oldest militia fatigues, and the men were still in their Liberty handouts. They'd divide the men into platoons later. For now, they'd eat, sleep, and exercise in a big mass. Even in the early days of their acquaintance, he was already conditioning himself to the idea that some of them, even all of them, might die in the coming operation. Valentine had made peace with his own death. He'd seen Kurian rule in all its fear and splatter. Faced with his experiences and the mixture of revulsion and hatred they inspired, he had only one option, the only option a man who wanted to call himself a man had, risking all in a fight that would end only with his death or the Kurian Order's destruction. Why the men under him signed up wasn't strictly his concern. whether they fought so they could look other soldiers in the eye, to take the place of a lost relative, to get an allotment, or because they thought of battle as the ultimate blood sport, made no difference regarding the orders he would give. He'd do his duty the same whether a man signed for faith or money. Speaking of duty, his first was creating a healthy environment for his men while they trained themselves into a fighting company. The only improvement to their ground was a length of 3-inch piping and some conduit extending out of the main camp. The rest of their materials were in the supply yard.
Tan, hut!
Patel stepped out of the little command shack, the only structure standing in their blister at the end of the camp. His cane had disappeared, and he looked as spry as ever. He walked back and forth in front of the men once. He'd inked in a star on his old stripes and done a good job of it. Valentine could hardly tell the difference.
My name is Sergeant Major Patel. You came here as 105 individuals. Southern Command's gonna make an army of one out of you. One well-trained, sharp brain that's always alert. One tough, reaper-eating body. One heart that fears only God and Sergeant Major Patel. You read me, slackers?
Sir! Yes, sir!
Rest of you haven't finished evolving? Communication occurs when the transmitter broadcasts and the transmittee acknowledges. Try again!
Sir! Yes, sir!
I don't want to hear harmony. You're not a fucking chorus all at once and louder.
Sir! Yes, sir!
After morning exercise, we're going to build you all shelters. Ladies get theirs first, because we're in Southern Command. We're blessed with natural gallantry.
Hut! Two! Three! Four!
Morning exercises lasted until lunch. Patel took them through his 12 labors. Again and again, he managed to find fault with the rhythm of their jumping jacks or the height of someone's buttocks during a push-up. He sent Valentine and four exhausted slackers off to get the meal while he finished with the rest.
Everyone gets one apiece!
There wasn't a chuck wagon available, so they piled bread and beans and trays into a wheelbarrow and ate with spoons. Dessert was flaky pastry smeared with grog guck. Valentine got tap detail. He filled cups and a couple of beat-up old canteens and bladders from the flow of water, so the recruits had something to drink with their food.
Mm-hmm.
With everyone sprawled on the cold, damp ground, eating and drinking, Valentine finally got his pan full of beans. The beans tasted as though they'd once shared a tin with some ham, but divorced some time back, though the molasses in the sauce was sweet and welcome. That night, they slept around 55-gallon drum stoves burning scrap from the lumber they'd measured and cut.
Hut! Two! Three! Four!
The first day was nothing to the second. Everyone ached as they moved through the 12 labors. As far as Patel was concerned, they weren't yet fit to wear Southern Command issue, and he showed them by having them running across, covering in, and crawling through the noisome field where the camp's sanitary waters drained off.
Too slow! Faster! Faster!
They slept in a formidable stench that second night, thanks to the field, and 2 days' worth, or more, the men had had a long trip on buses, of hard sweat body odor. Valentine liked the decision that they'd rather sleep rough and cold than dirty. Men who wanted to get clean had pride in themselves. He also liked being under Patel's orders. It got him out of camp high beam meetings and working dinners that were more social than productive. They had the floorboards laid, the sinks running, and the shower headings up when Patel stopped them and had them line up on the camp's main road to welcome 3 new companies of the guards into camp. They must have made a strange impression, hair spiky with mud, the odd multicolored dungarees of Camp Liberty filthy with a mixture of muck and sawdust.
Better get back to wrangling them pigs, boys!
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Somebody's been on shit detail!
The men stared off blankly into space or looked down. They didn't have the spirit to answer back. Yet. That was Valentine's job, and Patel's, and the rest of his NCOs, if he ever got any. To make up for the jokes, after dinner that night, he told them a little more about what they would be doing in the Kurian zone, scouting and trading for food, scrounging up replacement gear, and interacting with the local resistance. Unfortunately for his company, he learned the next day that the second name stuck. He discussed the problem with Patel in the little command shack as the men slept. Clean now, thanks to the functioning showers, but still in tiny field tents or bags in the cold dew, as they planned the day's training.
What do you think of promoting from within? There are several ex-sergeants. You even got a busted-down captain in your ranks.
I'd like to see talent rewarded. It's more of a mindset than technical and leadership skills that I'm worried about. In the Kurian zone, it's enough to just issue an order. Here the men like to know the whys and hows so they feel a part of something larger. I'd like to see initiative, intelligent initiative, from privates on up.
I don't think that's possible in a few months. If you want some sergeants taught to be Southern Command sergeants, I may be able to help. Can you get me any money?
I can try. What are you talking about?
About $30,000.
I don't have a pension to borrow against anymore, Patel. I'll try Lambert. She might have access to a slush fund. Tell me what you have in mind.
They worked out the deal with Lambert, the general, and Southern Command in 3 days. When Valentine pointed out that in the long run it would be cheaper than adding more men to the long out with bonuses and land grants and so forth, they agreed. Plus, it would be good for the shit details morale to be led by their own. Naturally, there were staffing orders to cancel. As luck would have it, one position filled as the order was transmitted. A heavy weapons expert named Glass, rank of corporal, and with a spotty record of wanting to do things his own way, showed up at camp and reported to the command shack as everyone was eating their lunches out of wheelbarrows again. A small man with a big pack, he looked like some kind of beetle with an oversized carapace of pack and camp gear. He also sported the world's scraggliest beard. It looked like Spanish moss Valentine had seen in Louisiana. Valentine stood up to welcome him, and Patel trailed behind.
Very glad to see you, Corporal Glass.
Thank you, sir.
Don't want this assignment, Glass? You didn't get someone twisting your arm to volunteer, I hope.
No, nothing like that, Major. Tell the truth, I'm glad to be back under General Lehman. Just tired from the trip.
Glass was one of those compact, wiry men in what looked to be his late 20s. Judging from his qualifications list on his cue file, he didn't look to be the type to wear down. Valentine let it rest.
You're early, Corporal, so you get to pick out the most comfortable corner in the NCO tent. It's just you and Sergeant Major Patel for now.
The two men sized each other up, Patel in his wolf leathers, hands sewn and patched. Glass stared vacantly at Patel, not so much challenging his superior as transmitting indifference.
What's the company's support weaponry?
It's not here yet. As you can see, everything's late to arrive, even uniforms. You might as well learn early. We're the shit detail of this outfit. Eat up.
Will that be all, sir?
For the moment.
I'll get myself squared away then.
Brittle. Just hope he's not about to break.
He's got outstanding references for his competency. Leadership's lacking. His last CO called him prickly.
Wonder how the guys who had to share a tent with him would have put it.
We're not going across the river to have a harvest bonfire and sing along. I'm willing to wait and see.
Valentine's company first lieutenant finally arrived late at night as Valentine caught up on paperwork in the one-bulb shack.
Oh!
Watch your step there, Lieutenant.
The man straightened, saluted, and handed Valentine his orders. They told a curious tale in the dates and checkboxes and comments. Valentine spent 60 seconds reading through. Lieutenant Militia Rowan Rand was Kentucky bred. His parents made the run for free territory when he was 15. His father disappeared one night while scouting what looked like a vacant farmhouse, and he'd helped his mother and sisters the rest of the way to the Ozarks, crossing the Mississippi on barrels a la Bilbo Baggins.
Stint in the militia, and then right into logistics commandos?
Rand blinked back at him through glasses that the ungenerous might call Coke bottle.
Bad eyesight. Astigmatism. I'm bat blind without my eyewear, plus I don't see so well in the dark. They never put it down on my record beyond needs glasses.
Southern Command's recruiters had the sense to weigh shortcomings against strengths, almost always in favor of giving a candidate a chance to prove their mettle.
You tore through the SC intelligent and aptitude tests. Your test scores make mine look like an illiterate.
6 years in a church academy in Columbia District.
Church background. I'll introduce you to Brother Mark. How'd you like it?
The schoolwork was fun. And there were all the outings and marches and drives, singing the happy tunes as we worked. I'm embarrassed to think about it now.
You were 11. How could you know? Same for you. You kind of choked up there, sir. I grew up in a different church, luckily. Huh. I would have run on my own during summer leave if my parents hadn't decided to try. Platoon leader and then a lieutenant in the militia. 5 trips into Kentucky, 3 into Tennessee with the LCs. No combat? Logistics commandos think that if you get into a fight, you're screwed.
The logistics commandos were odd units. They went into Kurian zones to beg, borrow, or steal items Southern Command had difficulty manufacturing or maintaining. Mostly, they were made up of veteran hunter members, wolves and cats primarily, but Valentine had heard that with hunter training slowed to a trickle, more and more regulars had been doing the hazardous duty. Valentine read to the bottom of his assignment orders. Lambert herself had placed Rand with his company. If she believed in the man, there was no need to probe further.
Welcome to Delta Company, Lieutenant. At the moment, Sergeant Major Patel is running the show, turning the men into a team. When we're on the parade ground, he's in charge.
Yes, sir.
I'll introduce you to the company. You'll stick close to me for a week or so until you find your feet, then you'll take over. I'm going north into Grog Country. I'll be back in a few weeks, barring catastrophe.
Rand sank into his duties easily enough. To Valentine's delight, he soon swam lustily. He was all knees and elbows in the field and had a tendency to trip. After a sprawl, he had a way of pushing his thick glasses back up his nose that disarmed the laughers and charmed the more sympathetic. He accepted formal command of the company from Valentine without fanfare. Valentine had a final word with Patel as the groom for the brigade stables held his horse, a sturdy Morgan named Raccoon. A pack horse stood just behind. Valentine hung his baggage and the odds and ends he'd been collecting on the pack horse.
Keep up the good work, Sergeant Major.
Enjoy your leave, sir.
It won't all be fun. I'm going to see if I can do a little more recruiting in Missouri.
You don't mean...
Yes. Grogs.
Valentine took the reins and walked with Patel toward the gate. Well, not so much a gate as a big chain with a Southern Command postal number hanging from it and blocking the camp's entrance.
Since you got out of the wolves, sir... Any head injury?
The Cowardly Lion says it wasn't so much a head injury as Bud ringing my wake-up bell.
Bud? Yes, my old friend who tried to climb up a tree to God. Your memory's still on target. I was going to ask who was the first governor of the Ozark Free Territory.
Curd Q. Pelgrim. I think you'll have to do better.
If a Quisling troop train pulls out of New Orleans at 12:30, going 20 miles an hour toward Baton Rouge, and 8 hours later their support train pulls out, going 40 miles an hour, when will the...
It won't. We'll blow up the bridge at Red River so the Quislings have to fight without artillery.
When are you going to change out of that militia rag?
Near the border, at one of those shifty inns that does business with the Grogs out of a basement armory.
Speaking of uniforms, there's a Kentucky gal in 2nd Platoon who used to be on some big bug staff, Ediac. Private Ediac now. She knows Kurian auxiliary forces from the Gulf Coast to the lakes. She's got a design for a uniform based on their priority labor. Moleskin, they call it. Almost as tough as leather, with denim shirts, both dyed down to a foggy gray.
Yeah, I've seen something like that in the KZ. Those the guys who run phone lines?
Yes, flying specialists that work their communications and electrical. Always moving from place to place so strange faces won't raise eyebrows.
Huh. Denim's easy to get. Labor troops. I don't know about the moleskin.
Popular with ranchers. Rand says he can find some with his old LC connections.
If she can modify them so they're Southern Command but still look KZ, that would be ideal.
I'll speak to her about it.
Put Rand to work getting denim and dye and sewing supplies. He might as well get his baptism of fire with supply or put his LC background to work in the UFR. Worst case scenario is there'll be a fresh set of civvies for our guys.
These leathers are getting a little gamey anyway.
How are the knees holding up?
I'm now a confirmed aspirin addict, sir.
Give yourself a break, Patel. Let Glass take him through the 12 labors. No one's going to think worse of you if you pick the cane back up after these last few weeks.
Roger that, sir.